Hi, everyone. I'm Lee Stapert, Editor-in-Chief of Keystone Edge. Welcome back to PRISM, a podcast series produced in partnership with the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts. In these conversations, we're shining a light on the power of creativity in PA communities. Season 2's episodes are coming out monthly, so don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. That way, you'll never miss one. Chester is a small city of over 30,000, nestled along the Delaware River southwest of Philadelphia. It's a place with a long history. It was incorporated in 1682 and is home to the Chester Courthouse, the oldest existing public building in the United States. It experienced an industrial boom driven by shipyards and manufacturing, followed by periods of unrest and divestment. As you'll hear in this conversation, it was also a key site of protest during the Civil Rights Movement. Chester these days is at an inflection point. Outside investment in a professional soccer stadium and waterfront casino have brought people to town. But even more importantly, a group of artists and small business owners have spent decades reimagining Overtown, a part of the city that now boasts galleries, shops, restaurants, and performance spaces, almost all of which are locally owned. Today, we're joined by two architects of Chester's Arts and Culture District to talk about the area's evolution and how they are working to make sure the city maintains its authentic, creative heart.
My name is Devin Walls. I'm an artist, developer resident, lifelong resident at Chester, PA. I'm an artist in the community who's been used in our arts practices to redevelop and redefine what Chester is. You know, the media has one definition of what Chester is, but if you took a chance to come down and see the practices and some of the programming that we've been doing in Chester, you'll know that it's totally different. So I'm here, Chester, PA, born and raised, and on the playground is where I spend most of my days.
Okay, yeah. My name is L. Ward, artist and community developer. That's it.
Okay, so Chester, to someone who is not familiar with the city, how would you describe Chester? Where is it? What does it look like? What's the built environment like? And what are the demographics like?
To me, Chester, how I would describe somebody who's not from here, I would say is highly complex. I would say it's multi-layered. It's things that most people see on the surface that they never get a chance to delve inside of Chester and see. Chester is community-based. It's family-oriented. You know, growing up in the neighborhoods in Chester, we always had things that were designed to pull neighborhoods together, to pull blocks together. Chester is a theater and arts community. Every household that I used to go in growing up was full of art or musicians or musical instruments, people singing, dancing. I always say to people, most of our houses were the theater in Chester, where we had theater in Chester. Chester is grassroots. Chester is underrated, underestimated, and always taken advantage of. Chester is so many things, but to me, Chester is family, is community, and it's a loving environment from my standpoint.
Well, Devin had mentioned that he's Chester, born and raised. L, are you also from Chester originally? And maybe you can add your thoughts on Chester and how you would describe it to someone who isn't familiar with it.
Yeah, born and raised in Chester, PA. I've traveled all around the world. It's a place that I would never. It has a particular style, but I can say this. Anyone that Chester and spends some time actually ends up moving here or becomes an outside resident, like regular. So that's been my relationship with every partner I've had, every associate, everyone that we deal with. They end up moving into the community. It has a really a small town feel, and people get stuck here. People come here and they get stuck. They do. Everybody. That's what I know about Chester.
So what do you think it is about the city that makes it sticky?
I guess you got to ask the people that aren't from here, but always do, because they hear all these things, get here and meet the people, and they get in the environment and they fall in love all the time. Like all of my like newer friends weren't from here, and they all have business here, or they actually. So You know, I do ask them, but I get the same feeling. And I've been everywhere. I lived in New York for a long time, and Chester just feels like home. Just what it feels like. It's small, and it's personal. You have personal relationships with people that go on for years and years and years.
So let's talk a little bit about the geography. So Chester is very close to Philadelphia. It's on a river, and then there is this central part of Chester, which I learned in our pre-interview call, you guys call Overtown?
Yes.
So tell me about Overtown, and tell me about the Avenue of the States.
So Overtown, Chester, was named in the late 1800s. The name comes from the same place, Overtown, Chester, in the UK. I guess some way or another, when they came and they colonized Chester, they said, we're going to bring the name from here, we're going to take the name from there. So growing up in Chester, we always lived on the outside. Overtown was owned by Jewish, Polish, Russian, anything but Black or African-American. And we used to leave from our neighborhoods and go over there. We used to go over there to shop, over there to dance, over there for everything, to pay bills. Everything that happened in Chester was happening in that business district there. So growing up in Chester, that was the place to be. If you were from here, that was our mall. That was everything in Chester. My uncles, my family had opened up some spaces over town because they were allowed by some of the Jewish owners to put small studio spaces upstairs in some of the buildings where they would teach art classes, stuff like that. We used to go there, and by 5 o'clock, we had to be out of there, you know, because it was one of those almost sundown towns for the African Americans. Before Elle and I were born, that's where they held the race riots at. That's where they held the school board protests. That's where they held the sit-ins, the marches, and all of those things right there on that block. So that block, to me, has a lot of significance to me. My aunts were bit by dogs there. My uncle was beat at times by police officers there. And we have the proof. We had the imaging, the pictures. And before my uncle passed, one of the things that he wanted to see was this arts and cultural district happened in Chester, which has never happened before. But he died not being able to get that done. You know, in the 60s, he was fighting, and his fight was way harder than mine right now, trying to get it down. Art seems to be the cool thing. But back then, you teaching your kids in your neighborhood about culture, about Africa, about independence, it was a fight that you would have to take, and they were fighting. So we identified the place where we needed to continue that march at, and it could happen nowhere else but Overtown. That's where the families were fighting at. That's where we had all of the protests. So it seemed like the right space to us. But in Elle and I's generation, it was no longer owned by the Jewish owners who owned the pawn shops, jewelry stores, and all that stuff. They passed it on to the Korean business owners. So Chester's Overtown became 100% Korean owned, in the midst of it being an African-American city, you know? So we had our struggles trying to get to the neighborhood. We had language barriers, we had cultural barriers. We had, they didn't trust Black people and we didn't trust them. We were just customers to them, you know? So we identified that that was the space that we wanted to do our arts and cultural district, and we weren't going to take no for an answer. So that's why we ended up on Avenue of the States. That's sort of some of the history of why I'm there myself. And Elle was there with me, but he may have some other reason that he identified that as being the space.
Yeah, Elle, do you have anything to add? And also maybe just talk about now, if you walk down Avenue of the States, what are people going to see? And what has been the result of some of this work before we dig back into how it happened?
I mean, it's just much different than what we used to know. I mean, you know, my experience over town, you know, coming up was a college store, Fort Worth, you know, big, you know, Bob and Dom. So, and it, you know, went from that to, like Dev said, you know, a sneaker place where it was just, it wasn't a cool place, but it was a place to go buy a sneaker. Once, you know, the 90s, you know, that started dying out. And there were some other guys that we know that were involved in just a business, you know, bootleg products, you know, small products. And it just wasn't a cool space. We always saw it as cool. Dev and I have been in over here for a long time.
we were much, much younger. And we just knew that we could make it cool. So now it's just, it's a cool spot. You know, 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds that would never come here, or older people, you know, 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds are just all showing up because it feels cool now because of what we're doing here now. So that's kind of the feel.
And how do you make sure that that coolness is, and that development is sustainable? How do you make sure that it lasts? You know, you're talking a lot generationally. How do you make sure that this goes forward?
I believe keeping the texture of the people there kind of keeps stuff cool. I think once it becomes, if it ever were to become cookie cutter-ish, the coolness kind of goes away, you know? When it's all sheetrock mantis, what we call it. When it doesn't have that artistic aesthetic to it. When you don't see the stamp of approval from the community on it. Because everything that we're doing, there are stamps all over it, you know? Most of the stuff that the people are seeing now are sweat equity, it's found objects, it's creativity put in behind it. We haven't been going into Home Depot and saying, oh, we need a lamp for here, and just going to buy a Home Depot lamp. No, we'll design the lamps, we'll make the furniture, we'll make the paint. So that kind of keeps the cool aesthetic for us. So when people come there, it's different because they come in and say, oh, wow, I never saw this before. They know they don't have it in their home, but now we're being asked to design other spaces from the coolness that we have here. So we know as long as we can keep our hands in it and make sure that we're curating and designing what's happening, the pool will be there. And I think the pool would even grow more and more.
Yeah, you talked about ownership through the generations. Yes. What does the ownership look like now? And what do you hope it looks like going forward?
Right now, it's looking like us. You know what I mean? It's changed a lot. For me, you know, we have children. And we have a lot of young guys look up to us because of what we're doing. We've found a large group of younger teens and up to, you know, 30-year-olds that look at the change and they see it and understand it's something else. So, you know, my main object is to implant that same thing that, like Dev said, that he got from his uncle. You know, just that part. He got a part from him. I'm not going to say it was Don, but he was a great artist. He lived in my neighborhood. And it was a design, it was a way. And Dev was able to take tad bits of that and turn it to something else. And I feel like our job is to teach younger people how to take care of a neighborhood first, how to develop a neighborhood and take care of it. You know what I'm saying? So that's, I feel like that's the main focus, to get not just Dev and I, but, you know, it's other people involved, definitely other people involved. But I'm talking about younger people to follow that same thing and to step it up and take it a little further than us. So I feel like that's happening now. I see it. I see it in their eyes. I hear it in the conversation, and really just trying to, right now, the biggest thing is to try to start getting younger guys to invest in their community, which is, you know, communities here and, you know, in the blocks right outside of the neighborhoods, right outside of this. So I think it's going to be contagious.
To piggyback on what L just said, right now, a lot of the younger people really didn't know what ownership looked like. There were only small spurts of shops that looked like us in our neighborhood. L family owned one, my family owned one. And trying to teach a community who never even owned a house, who haven't went to college, like this generation is the first generation going to college. We turned into teachers unwillingly. We didn't know we were teaching something. We thought that this was just human nature. But as we look back and as we have conversations with people, they said, I never knew that we could own our own business. I never knew we could own our own restaurants. We couldn't own this whole, which people look at it now, like our destiny now. We kind of took in our destiny in our hands. So teaching ownership was one of the hurdles that we had to get through, because in our community, when people see you owning stuff or they think you have more than them, they get this, what we call hate in our neighborhood. Like, yo, you hating on me, or it's these other things that come along with it. So we've been ducking and dodging a lot of obstacles just trying to teach this. And we started off just wanting to be artists and designers and wanting to open up cool spaces in the neighborhood. But then we turned into developers, missionaries, philanthropists, and all of these other things that we didn't intentionally want to turn into. But I think that just came with the lay of the land. And now teaching people is really the most important part of the work that we do, right? Because if we don't teach our children, then their children will grow up without knowing the same thing.
Thinking about Chester and talking about having local people, local ownership of businesses, local ownership of land, local ownership of homes might become even more important down the line because there is outside investment coming into Chester. I think a lot of people, especially from Philadelphia, now associate Chester with the soccer stadium or with there's a casino. So there is money coming into Chester. Can you talk a little bit about how you make sure that that development helps the community and doesn't just lead to harmful gentrification or the wrong kind of development?
That's a big question right there. Because what happens in situations with those entities that you just named, they come with big purses. They come with big back. They're talking about some development on the waterfront, $59 million, the casinos developing $70 million. And you're talking about a downtown business district that's owned by small guys from the community. They could eventually be stomped on. But what we've been trying to do was position ourselves for the things that we know are to come. You don't put stadiums and casinos and hotels in a neighborhood and think about a neighborhood. I don't care what nobody said. They can call us to all of the meetings that they want to. They're just calling us to the meeting to find out how we won't do it. I think our job is to be present, to be a part of the conversation, and see how we can incorporate and be an asset to what is being built and then be an asset to what we're building and see the connectivity in that. There's no way in the world right now that I can see us competing with that. So we have this saying, if you can't beat them, join. So we just want to join in the conversations and help build it, but in the same time, not being controlled by it. Because the thing is, they'll come in and they can offer small pots of money, but with those small pots of money, a lot of times control comes. It's what you can do, what you can't, how you can do it, the timelines when you can do it. You can't cross this line. And we don't want to be a part of those type of conversations. It has to be really genuine and really beneficial to our community. So one of the things that we have done, we've got independent funding from other sources that have no connection to the city, to the state, to the government, which is funding a lot of that stuff that you're talking about down on the waterfront here in Chester. We got partners like Bard Rock, who is from Vermont, and Bard Rock is a 501c3 that's headed up by one of our partners, Chuck Lacey, and Ben from Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream. So we've got partners like them who see the vision, and they jumped in 100% with us, and they've been helping us get from A to Z. Right now, we're probably like 60-something percent in our build downtown. I think we had some hurdles that we had to cross, and then other investors jumped in. We had Springpoint jump in. We had work with the PA Humanities. Laurie had jumped in and helped in certain instances. So we had to seek independent funding so we don't lose the build that we're building, because we want to still build it our way. We want to build it with the community in mind. And a lot of times, if you look at the development plans from those big behemoth companies, the community is the last thing to see at the bottom. And we're called in on these small meetings at the end after they already had the meetings about what's happening. So,
right. They're like, we'll put in a mural.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll add some trash cans to the block. And that's not, you'll have to do more to be a part of what we're building. And we're holding people accountable at the same time.
Yeah. Al, do you have anything to say about sort of these outside forces that are coming into Chester?
Yeah, I've seen it happen everywhere. To me, I felt like the people that it happened to totally have their own identity. I felt like even when something gigantic happens 10 blocks away or 5 blocks away, you can make your particular area super, super cool too. And that's what we have to do. We don't have to, I mean, you don't want to stop the money from coming. You don't want to stop big business from coming. You don't want to stop better housing from coming. You don't. But you have to make what you have really, really good. And I feel like as long as what we have is really good in the area that we dominate an area that we really are dedicated to, we can prosper, you know what I mean? And we can continue to build the same way we're building now. So I don't really oppose, you know, big business. I just feel like you have to be solid. You know what I mean? Like, you got to be solid. I grew up in New York in Soho, stayed Soho for a long time with the big Midtown on the side. And Soho turned to what Soho did. And I know a lot of owners there, you know, people that own stuff since the 80s. And Soho is still cool. You got the biggest stores, you got the best stores, you got the coolest stores in that area. And, you know, you don't have a H&M next door to you. You know what I'm saying? So you can stay cool. You just have to concentrate on what you have as smaller businessmen and artists. Those are the things. If you can stick to that, you own what you have. You can stick to that. I don't care what gets built around you. You remain cool. You remain good. What I feel like our job is to bring something totally authentic. Just stay authentic.
You're listening to Prism on Keystone Edge in partnership with the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, which believes that building stronger communities takes creativity. Learn more about how the council supports Pennsylvania's diverse creative sector at arts.pa.gov.
So let's talk about what's cool and what's good. If someone was coming to Chester on a Saturday afternoon, where would you send them? And what should they check out? What are the creative spaces, the artistic spaces, the food, the cafes that they should make sure that they hit to understand what's going on in Chester right now?
Me, myself, I would take them on a tour of downtown, because to understand it, you won't understand it walking down the streets by yourself, and you really won't see everything that's happening on the surface. It's a lot of stuff that's happening that doesn't have a shiny sign or a shiny storefront. Myself, personally, I would go into Indigo Mills, which is our artist studios, because there's some interesting characters there that I think that they would have to meet in order to understand those layers that we were talking about when you talk about Chester. I would take them in to meet McLeod, meet CMP Radio Station. I would take them in there so they can meet Bones at Radical. Does a lot of work in fashion design. I would then take them out to the deck so they could sit and just have a peaceful conversation with nature in Chester. Because when you say Chester, nobody says nature. Nobody says kayaking, canoeing. Nobody says these things. But that space is a space where when you don't want to be involved with everything that's happening in the community, you go out and you sit in that space. Then I would say, oh, it's 11 o'clock. It's time to go get some lunch. I would walk around to Duo Taco. I would walk them to Duo and get a taco there, sit there and watch the vibrations of the city. Then I would say, man, let's go check out L, see if he's working on one of his sculptures right now. So I would walk him to L's studio. Then I would walk him into Picasso's studio, any Picasso, not the other Picasso. So I could see some of the artwork. I would take them into some of the gallery spaces. I would take them up and down the block and describe to them the history of the block, the first courthouse in the United States. I would walk them up to the top of the corner and I would say, this newsstand here is where our family held our first civil rights protest in Chester, which we now own, that we're turning into a hot dog and ice cream space for the community, a space where everybody is inclusive at. I would explain to them how all of the business owners came together and identified that neighborhood as the neighborhood where they wanted to be. And then I would sit down with them and I would say, what do you think about Chester now?
Sign me up. Sounds great. Al, do you have anything to add? Anything else you would put on the itinerary?
No, I think he wrapped that up. That's the neighborhood. You know, that's the neighborhood.
So this podcast, the whole premise is that arts and culture and the economy, they're not separate. They're together. And that the more creative stuff you have going on and the more people who are able to make a living as creative people, the better it is for cities, towns, economies, the better it is for everyone, really. Do you feel like you've had to make that argument in Chester that the arts are important to the bigger economic picture, or do you feel like people kind of get it already?
I don't think most people get it. Because the thing is, with cities like Chester, we have to explain ourselves a lot of times before we get to the arts conversation. The first thing that every person that comes from different spaces, and most of them are Caucasian, I'm going to just be 100% real. The first question they ask, when I come there, am I going to be safe? We got to explain safety measures, and we got to explain that nobody will be hurt coming to see art Chester. Nobody will be robbed. Your car tires will still be there when you get there. So there's a lot of explaining to do before we get into the arts conversation. And we can have this conversation with most people on the phone, on Zoom calls, and they're just, okay, cool, cool, cool. But it's not until they get there that they truly get what we're talking about. Now, we have everybody from millionaires, multimillionaires, billionaires visit the block on a regular basis now. But before, it took us months, if not years, to get them to the block, you know? So everybody doesn't get it. When you say Chester, it's not this big artist that lived there that conquered the world. We don't have Picasso or Basquiat or Dali's or anything like that hanging in any museum there. So we don't have that big tourism drive to Chester yet. So we're building those things that make people say, I get it now. They didn't exist before us. We're building them now. So we're still conquering and jumping those hurdles at the same time.
Al, do you have anything to add?
I mean, they don't get it. You know, I deal with a lot of people in Philadelphia on different levels. One of my friends is opening a restaurant here now, and he has a pretty popular restaurant in Philadelphia. So you know how it is. When you're building something, you know, certain people are going to be early and certain people aren't. You know, you watch Fishtown, Philadelphia. You watch Steven Starr build restaurants where nobody else will build a restaurant. We all know what, you know, what Fishtown was before it turned to what it is now. You know, I was there. I knew the owners there before. I know the people that sold properties and made a lot of money by holding out. So, you know, we've seen these things happen before. It's just not our community. It's just the way things go. So the cool early people, you know, they benefit from it. And that's just how it goes. Because a lot of those places where I'm using Star in particular, you know, Dev, he knows for a fact before Old City was what it is now, it was just Shirt Corner, Lamar. Taylor Lamar was there, you know what I'm saying? The Regent hit selling old Gator shoes at the meeting many, many years ago in the early 90s. And we were saying, like, this could be it. Like, this is a downtown. And we were the group of investors, and they bust out laughing real loud. The hardest laugh I ever heard in my life. And it was like, yo, this could be this could be it. We was just like all hyped up, and we were with a friend of ours that was a pretty big attorney, sports attorney. And we were just like super hyped. They were like, get out of here. This has never happened. And you see what it is now. The same thing in Frankfurt, you know, with my friends that own motorcycle shops there, Adam, Liberty, you know, Liberty Vintage Motorcycles. And it was nothing. And nobody was investing and nobody believed. But then the right person opened the restaurant and everything changed. So that's all we're going through. You know, we've been here, Dev and I have been, we've been partners since we were kids. Like, seriously, we have had multitudes of children. Same time, we have all our kids on the same day. You know what I'm saying? So we've been together for a long time, and we've seen it. We've seen it all. You know, we've seen a lot, and I feel like this place is a lot of people do see it. You know, I feel like some people don't, and they never will. It'll be over and it won't be any room to invest or won't be any room to get, you know, just be, you know, closed up, wrapped up. But this town has something special. It really does. The level of crime, because I grew up in New York too, and I know Philadelphia very well. Me and Dev, we own businesses in Philadelphia. We don't have the crime that other towns have. Purse snatching, car, you know, people just breaking in cars all the time, burglary. Barely have decent, like, real locks on any of our stores. We don't have, like, padlocks and double locks. None of them do. You know what I'm saying? We got, like, a lock. You really can pick the lock. So it's not one of those towns. And when people get here, they feel that. So I feel like a lot of people, once they come, they get it. And I think that's what's going to take us all the way.
So last question. Let's look in the future. Let's look 10 years, 20 years. what's going on in Chester and what's going on the Avenue of the State, and you know, what's the vibe? I wish people could see the video. You guys are both smiling.
Beautiful housing. Not seriously. Beautiful housing. Really nice restaurants. You know, it's happening. It's happening. Great, great people. Great, you know, 10 years. We're talking 10 years from now, so I'll probably be an old guy then. But our children who are growing up in it, that get it, understand it, you know, bleed it just like us. Our children becoming who we are and, you know, being better than us. Understanding how to deal with it. So, bringing their, you know, experience from college and, you know, the work field, bringing it back to the neighborhood. This place is going to be, it's going to be really good in 10 years. And I feel like a lot of people that, especially our partners, they've been 100%. I'm talking about, they never flinch. You know what I mean? No matter what comes up, they never flinch. So as long as we keep people like that around and, you know, some of the different investors around, this place is going to be, it's going to be really good. I think it's going to be even better after World Cup. I think a lot of people are going to see it after World Cup coming to, you know, healthcare. You know, we have a big, big soccer stadium here. So a lot of people will be able to see at that magnitude. When you got people at that magnitude, you got a lot of different thinkers. Everybody's not stuck in the mindset of, oh, that's Chester. People never heard of Chester before. It's like, yo, I'm from freaking Ireland. I don't know what Chester is. I love it. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it takes. It takes people that aren't getting beaten in the head by years of the news. Oh, yeah, this is places. They dump this there. They do that. So new, fresh, new people connect with the natives. And I feel like it's going to be a great place to take.
So I see a founding father sat me down. Yo, laugh. I'm serious. I think right now, what we're building right now, in all honesty, all jokes aside, is in 10 years, it'll be all of those things that El said. The restaurants, shopping, the nightlife. But I think also you'll see what ownership of the people could look like. I think it would be the framework for a lot of cities around the country, if not around the world. Right now, Elle and I have been on Avenue of the State since 1994. Most people think we just got there when the grant showed up. No, we were there in 1994. My uncles and I had just shut down a lot of the shops there, and it was dark. It was closed. There was nothing happening. We have video of us being there also. That's going to be in a documentary that we're working on. So 10 years from now, you'll see a movie about it as well. So I think the people will get out of this build right now will help in the build 20 years after ours. People right now are now thinking about ownership. So now we can see the neighborhoods switching. We can see people sweeping up in the neighborhoods. We can see trash being picked up in the neighborhoods. And we see a lot of art happening in a lot of spaces around the community that weren't seen before. So 10 years from now, you'll be able to walk downtown and see a nice play, a nice production. Then you'll be able to leave there and go to a nice restaurant, whether it's a 5-star, 3-star, 2-star restaurant on that same block. Then you'll be able to go into other spaces and see your kids being educated, learning about all of these things that happen and learning about the people who made those things happen. I guess my wish for this next few years into those 10 years is that we keep on building it with the same integrity that we've been building it with from the beginning. Don't get worried about the money that's going to the waterfront, the money that people are spending around you. Just stay focused on your vision, your dream. We got one team and we got one dream, just to get this completed. You know what I mean? And in 10 years from now, I want my kids to look like, wow, my dad, my uncle, my family, they did it. And they're going to say they've been doing it since the 50s, since the 60s, not since the 90s. So it's a legacy that we're building. And I want people to see that legacy in 10 years. I want to be the ones that's talked about in the history book. And that's in all honesty.
That's it for our latest episode of Prism. If you have thoughts on the conversation you just heard or ideas for what we should cover in upcoming episodes, please visit our website, KeystoneEdge.com, and reach out. You can also message us on Facebook or Instagram. Until next time.